Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage in the Ganiagaha language and Muniang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater in English and French with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah Day, live in studio for our first show of the year on Thursday, January 5th, 2023. Bonne année, bon anno. Happy New Year. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you had a great holiday. Perhaps you are still on holiday and still on break. Orthodox Christmas is tomorrow, so you may be celebrating that and getting ready for that or getting ready for Epiphany. And I hope you had a time to rest and recharge. Maybe you took in theater, perhaps in the form of the Nutcracker. You went to see Corteo like I did with my mom at Cirque du Soleil at the Bell Center. Wow, really fun to be back at a big circus show. In any case, we have a lot to talk about on tonight's program. The return of Johnny Legdick, a cheesy, silly musical, yes, about a man with a third leg. It gets new life this month. Yeah, you could say it has legs. I'll speak with the director and playwright and the composer and musical director. That'll be at the top of the show, followed by a social call that takes a very wild turn in Canadian playwrights Matt Murray's comedy Myth of the Ostrich, a return to live theater for D Squared Productions. We'll reach them in the middle of rehearsal. And finally, a triptych, a triplex, and a lot of trauma. Wildfire gets its English premiere later this month. It's by Quebec playwright Daniel Paquette, and that must mean it's a Talisman Theatre production. They like to premiere French language performances in their first premiere in English. Director John Lachlan Stewart will join me. Off the top of the show, I do want to give a little recognition to a very special dancer who grew up in Ganawage on the South Shore. This is Lulu, La Duchesse de Larrière, known to her friends and family as Lauren Ashley Giles. She is part Mohawk, part Black, and all around quite an impactful performer. And she was named Miss Exotic World at the Burlesque Hall of Fame weekend in Las Vegas 6 months ago, and then recently has been placed as the second most influential burlesque performer in the world. I picked this up by Daniel J. Rowe at CTV Montreal, who spoke with her to talk about this recent listing, which is kind of nice. The number one performer is Ginger Valentine. So this is for the past year. The 21st Century Burlesque magazine has been writing this list for 14 years now. And I know Lulu has also been at the top of like a world performance, like global list in the past. So it's kind of nice to see local talent getting that spotlight. I know she obviously does not just perform in Montreal. She travels a lot and has a very big online presence. And so she could maybe have caught her in Chicago, New Orleans, Las Vegas, and also other international destinations. If you want to find out what that's all about, you can visit her on Instagram, Lulu La Duchesse, where she has over 36,000 followers. She also donates to good causes when she has fundraisers. She's been listed as a top burlesque performer in Canada before. So maybe we'll get her on the show at some point this year. I've tried in the past. I am hoping to get a burlesque performer and Wiggle Room owner, newly minted owner of the Wiggle Room space, Frenchie Jones, on the show perhaps for next week. So we'll have a little conversation about how the burlesque community is doing shortly. But first, we have three shows to tell you about on the local scene. First up, Johnny Legdick. I'm going to get my two guests on the phone and be back with you in just a moment. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Fuck that shit. Hold on. I got to start this motherfucking record over again. Wait a minute. Fuck that shit. Still on this motherfucking record. I'ma play this motherfucker for y'all. Hey, y'all get some more drinks going on. I sound a whole lot better. Thank you.
ritualistic, cleansing my soul of addiction for now, cause I'm falling apart. Yep. Tension between us just like picket fences. You got issues that I won't mention for now, cause we're falling apart. Passionate from miles away, passive with the things you say, passing up on my old ways. I can't blame you, no. No. Passionate from miles away, passive with the things you say, passing up on my old ways. I can't blame you, no. From a distance, I think we should rule out commitment for now, cause we're falling apart. Leaving, you're just doing that to get even. Don't pick up the pieces, just leave it for now. They keep falling apart. Passionate from miles away, passive with the things you say, passing up on my always. I can't blame you, no. No. Passionate from miles away, passive with the things you say, passing up on my always. I can't blame you, no.
Music bringing us back there on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM from the GEM, Montreal's loudest acoustic rock band. Members of the band are going to be performing with Johnny Legdick, the fabled rock opera. The return of a very silly but very entertaining musical that delighted audiences back in 2014 and 2015. It is the story of a man forsaken by his family who, yes, has a third leg. Johnny the Fabled Rock Opera arrives with a bit of an update to Théâtre Sainte-Catherine for two nights only next weekend, January 13th and January 14th. Three performances, 8 o'clock both nights, and then 10 p.m. on the 14th. Joining me on the phone right now is director and playwright Jimmy Karamanis and musical director and composer McLeod Truesdale. Welcome, guys. Oh, hold on. I'm going to put on the phone patch before I actually get them on. Hey, guys, are you there?
Yeah, how's it going?
Awesome. Hey, I'm running my own board tonight, so I have to remember to do things like putting up sounds and all those good bits there. You know how it is. Welcome, and congratulations on remounting the show.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks so much. It's been a long time.
Yeah, a bit of a trip.
Yeah, nearly 10 years. That's quite an incredible feat. Let's reintroduce ourselves to Johnny Legdick. As I mentioned, it's a guy who gets born with a third leg who's right in the middle. It's really funny how it's portrayed on stage. Maybe, Jimmy, you can start with the early days of Johnny Legdick. I just confused your name.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of J's in this group, actually, so that's going to happen. I was doing a lot of theater back when we started seeing Johnny Legdick, and this was like my first shot at a musical. The idea, I think the original like song idea was Jonah's in like high school, is that right?
Probably around like Deja days, I would
okay,
say.
Okay, so yeah.
I remember he would sing that to me sometimes, just in like, you know, like with my parents, like, side room where we would be having like a cigarette, and you just sing that to me, and I thought it was the silliest thing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't imagine that a whole show would spring from it, but here we are.
Yeah, basically. It feels like something that's a fever dream, or as you said, kind of joke between friends, but it did have legs of sorts. So how did you go from taking it like something that was a joke over a cigarette into fleshing it out into a full-on musical?
To say that it happened organically is really an understatement. The first time we discussed it and kind of like, you know, tossed around the idea, half of the play was like done almost in that very, or just at least the concept, not, you know, not the script and all the songs, but like the concept is very fleshed out from the first like kind of brainstorming of it.
Okay, so tell me more about the journey that Johnny goes on, because he starts out kind of like as a Charles Dickens character. He's an unhappy, kind of unloved child.
Well, it's basically a send-up of a classic hero's journey. So we really, like, when we came to this concept, we really wanted to hit a lot of those same beats where, it's like, you have your call to adventure, you have your downtrodden person, and eventually they grow into the hero by the end of the show. But we wanted to do that in the silliest, most immature way we possibly could conceive of. So we're thinking Rocky Horror meets kind of like Star Wars.
Yeah, fair.
With a new framing device, kind of maybe more Princess Bride meets Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Right. So Johnny gets sold to the circus by his parents. He does end up being kind of lucky in love. He meets a lady who is in a kind of similar physical situation to him.
Yeah.
And he is a member of a circus and kind of goes on this great adventure. I'm speaking with Jimmy Karamanis, who's director and playwright of Johnny Teglik, as well as musical director and composer of MacLeod Truesdale. Guys, I feel so immature because every time I say the name, like, it just makes me giggle. So why choose to revisit this story nearly 10 years after it first hit the stage?
Well, if I'm being completely honest here, I don't think we ever should have stopped. But, you know, things being what they are, people kind of take a step back or, you know, things change. So we just kind of let it slide for a bit. And then what, like maybe at the beginning of last year or maybe a little after that?
It was around the summer, really. We had four very successful runs, but it is a lot on people. We even traveled with the show to Toronto, and it was a great experience. We did Fringe here in Montreal, Fringe there. We managed to get into the wild side of Centaur, no pun intended, and wild to me that we still did Centaur Theater.
Yeah.
That's where I saw the show, and I had heard so much buzz about it and finally got to check it out then. So it did have, like, I keep saying this is a joke from your press release there, but it did have legs. You performed it in different places, but at some point, I guess, you just kind of run out of fuel, you hang up the hat, and you move on to other things. It's so funny because a lot of people turned away from live performance and live theater in the pandemic, and you've returned to the stage.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something that you can only really get in the theater, right? Like something like Johnny Galactic can really only work as a cartoon or a theater piece, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And cartoons are really, really expensive.
Jimmy, for you, this is your first return to the theater since the project was on stage. So how, as you mentioned, you did a lot of theater before you're performing. So how does that feel for you?
It feels like coming home. It really does feel like, I'm awake for the first time in a very, very long time. You know, not to say that I didn't like the other stuff I was doing, but it just feels like I never left. You know, the muscles were still there. It's like riding bike, jump back in the chair and take on all the stress and responsibility, and it's great. I love it. It's a lot of fun.
So I would be surprised if a lot of people could remember the exact plot and all the songs. I mean, actually, the songs are all online on Bandcamp, which is really cool. But what's kind of neat is that even if you're sitting there and you're kind of remembering certain things, you've actually revamped the show. So it's going to be slightly different for the folks who may have seen it at Fringe and at Wildside or in Toronto even. What kind of adjustments have you made? Like, have you freshened up the script or kind of changed the story?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, like, as I mentioned before, we really actually kind of framed the whole story. So even though that the plot beats are pretty much the same as they were before, the way we tell the story is very different now. It's a storybook style. It has these rhyme schemes. It's almost rhythmic thing that matches the music super well because you have, in both cases, this rhythmic drive throughout the show, and it's really fun watching the actors play off this kind of Dr. Seuss style of dialogue while also having these big rock numbers.
Yeah.
So there's this big contrast and big energy to the entire thing, and like a childlike energy, because this is really a bunch of men children, you know, coming together and putting on something that makes them laugh, but hopefully makes other people laugh too.
I will say that, it's like man-child jokes, but at the time, like, there was a lot of praise from the critics at the moment that, it was kind of infantile in its own sense, but people thought it was just genuinely very funny and very fresh. And I want to say that just to reinforce that something could be very childish, but also super entertaining at the same time. You also have a cool cast move, which is that the lead from Jonah Carson, who's been with the show since, I guess, its inception, will be joined by a family member on stage.
Without spoiling anything, it could not be better that Jonah's dad is going to be in the show. Like, I used to say that, like, the meat is going to kind of sound a bit self-deprecating here, but I used to think that the music really held up the show as a whole before, whereas now I really think the script is just so tight and so silly and really a unique thing. And having this new cast take on like a new script sets no precedent, right? Because they don't have to imitate what the other cast
did. Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, it's not like trying to recapture something that the other cast that we had did so well.
This is a new cast doing a new script. You know what I mean?
So there's,
and they're really kicking it out of the park, too.
So the cast is entirely changed or just slightly changed? Or
I would say it's entirely changed.
It's entirely different cast. I mean, like you said, Jonah was obviously involved in the show before as a writer, and also he was in the band originally and played like a very minor character in the original show. But now he is Johnny Leipzig,
which
feels so appropriate.
He's had a promotion of sorts.
In a way.
Promotion, a bird, and who knows?
He has to wear the pants, so...
We're speaking with Jimmy Karamanis and McLeod Truesdell, respectively, the director, writer, and musical director and composer of Johnny Legdick, the fabled rock opera, coming to Théâtre Sainte-Catherine next weekend. So this is going to be remounted 3 times over the course of 2 nights. For you guys, would you love for someone to see it and be like, come to Toronto or come to Winnipeg, whatever? Like, are you hoping it has legs and gets to be performed somewhere else? Is that the goal?
I'm of the mind that I'm thinking about the next couple of shows. But, you know, you never know how these things could happen. I'm pretty sure people in those cities would enjoy it, too.
Yeah, I think this one, it really is kind of we're kind of getting back on the horse and just seeing if we can do it again. You know, it's been so long and a lot of things have changed. So this was more of a like, all right, let's see if we can still put this thing on. And with the intention of raising some money to, like, fund a second show or grant or something.
Or a new project altogether.
I'm sorry?
Or a new project altogether.
Yeah, we have a few ideas for, like, other similarly silly ideas, but something new, I think, is what's probably going to come after this. But, I mean, if the show is as good as we think it is, then maybe we'll keep doing it. What else?
Jimmy and McLeod, how old were you guys in 2014 and 2015 when the show first came out?
I was
23 and 24.
23, 24, yeah. Right.
Somewhere there.
So nearly 10 years on, there's lots of baby theater kids who might be in their early 20s or teens, and they haven't seen this at all. Are you excited for a new generation to check out your tongue-in-cheek childish humor?
Yeah, I mean, they can see, either an aspirational thing or maybe the pitfalls of doing something like this. I'm not sure.
I think they'll definitely get a kick out of it. I mean, it's a fairly unique, like, kind of show, at least for Montreal, I'd say. It's a fairly, like, something you don't see very often.
No, I'd agree with that. I'll let you guys play DJ here. I've got the Bandcamp in front of me, so you can head to johnnylegdick.bandcamp.com if you'd like to check out the album. Which song would you like to hear to close you guys out?
Maybe
the opening?
Maybe High Five.
High Five? Okay.
Johnny's love song to his love interest.
His three-legged love interest. Awesome. We'll do that. Jimmy Karamanis cool. and McLeod Truesdale, the brains behind the long-anticipated return of Johnny Legdick, the fabled rock opera. Thanks so much, guys. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Awesome. So that's Jimmy and McLeod, who are really excited to remount the show with some updates, as they mentioned, January 13th and the 14th at Théâtre Sainte-Catherine. Performances at 8 o'clock both nights, and then a late one on the 14th at 10 p.m. So for tickets and more information, you're going to head to Théâtre Sainte-Catherine's website to get more info. And you can also, as I mentioned, go to johnnylegdick.bandcamp.com to hear some of the music. We're going to play you out with Hannah High Five here, as I mentioned, his romantic tribute to his love interest, Johnny's love interest, Hannah. When we come back, we will speak with Dale Hayes of D2 Productions. A social call takes a wild turn. This is D2's return to the live theater, and I'm eager to check in with Dale. All when we come back on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. You just heard Hannah High Five, a love song from the Johnny Legdick soundtrack. As I mentioned, the musical will be back next weekend at Théâtre Sainte-Catherine. So you can head over to, I'm going to double check that website for you so you can get that. TheatreSainteCatherine.com, theater, the full world, and Saint, full word, and Saint written out with the full word and an E at the end, of course. And head to Programmation, and you'll be able to find your tickets there for Johnny Legdick, which will be back shortly. We move on now to another show that is going to be starting in just a matter of days. They are knee-deep in rehearsals for Myth of the Ostrich, which is coming to the Siegel Studio starting on Monday, January 9th. That's coming up soon. And running until January the 15th. Dale Hayes is the director and producer of this production, and she joins me on the phone. Good evening.
Good evening, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. This is the return of your theater company's production, or Time to the Stage, D Squared Productions. How does that feel?
It feels really good. This play has been 3 years in the making. We were about to sign a contract a week before everything shut down 3 years ago, so we are anxious to get this up and running. For sure.
Oh my goodness, I can just imagine. And how nice to start it off with a comedy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Myth of the Ostrich is about a social call gone wrong. So let's start there. Tell me more about the story.
Well, what begins as a social call quickly and hilariously takes a really bizarre turn. And what follows is an unpredictable afternoon, and it has some life-altering consequences. So it starts with these three women, very, very different women, and they spend the afternoon together, and there's a lot going on. There's some, a little bit of subtle drug use. There's the mentions and discussions of the LGBTQ plus issues for teens, and we have some profanity. But it's a fun show. And we're really looking forward. You know, what we felt was, although we really missed not putting it on 3 years ago, I think now is a great time because I think what we all need is a little bit of levity. and a whole lot of laughs.
Yeah, it's always perfect timing, especially in January, coming off the holidays. And it's been a tough year for many different reasons for a lot of folks, and it's nice to be distracted. But there is some meat there in terms of, as you were saying, there's some LGBTQ issues that get touched on. What do we get into there? Are we talking about people learning to get to know themselves or introduce themselves to the world, coming out?
It's basically about two mothers whose children are, I just don't want to give too much away because there is a surprise element here, but there is some discussion on the acceptance of your child if they are LGBTQ+, what society thinks of them, what the church maybe thinks, what their views are. So a lot of that is discussed, but in a very humorous way. You know, it's light. There are some very serious discussions going on, but it is taken very lightly, and I think people are going to get a lot out of it for that.
D Square Productions only works with Canadian playwrights exclusively.
That's right.
And this is Matt Murray's play. What? Tell me about his comedic stylings and his timing, and you know what maybe from his script stood out to you.
Yeah, what really stood out was how smart it was. You know, I think the fact that he wrote these characters so differently, they are so polar different from each other that it really speaks to his writing skills for sure. But you know, it's really a smart play, and it touches on all these different issues, and there's some debate, and yet it's taken in a very light-hearted way. So it's not in your face, but it's there, and I think people are going to walk out thinking about what they just saw. I mean, what's really important for us is that people come into the theater. This play is done in real time, so it's an hour and a half in these people's lives. There's no set changes. It's just go as you come. And, I want people to leave just thinking that they were voyeurs watching these three women go through their afternoon and perhaps learn something or, you know, come to some sort of realization in their head as well. It's not, you know, it's kind of play that you walk out of there and you're happy. It's a really nice ending. But there's all that stuff that's going on inside within the play that's really interesting. And I think Matt really captured, you know, writing about three women, him being a male himself, you know, writing about three women and how totally different they are. I think it's really, really interesting. He did a great job.
I am so curious about a writer that gets into the head of another gender, but obviously it happens all the time, but it's something quite quicksilver and magic about something that's done so accurately.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm speaking with Dale Hayes, who is director and producer of Myth of the Ostrich. We were just talking about Matt Murray, the playwright there. It's a comedy, and it comes to the Siegel Studio starting on Monday, running through the week, this coming Monday, January 9th already. Can you believe it? where are you in the prep process? I you mentioned earlier this week that you were in, like, I guess, kind of knee deep in rehearsals.
Yeah. Well, we're just putting the final touches on it. You know, as everyone does when you're in the last week, it's just fine tuning it, getting it going, just having a lot of fun. What's really important when I'm directing is that the actors have fun doing it. It's got to look like it's fun. And we have some very, very talented actors. I'm happy to say they include Leanne Taylor, Helena Levitt, and Julie Barbeau. And we have a very diverse, what I'm really happy about is the fact that we have a really diverse crew as well. You know, we have people of color, we have LGBTQ+ people involved, males, females, you know, so it's really great that we were able to put this play together with such a diverse cast of characters. And I just want to mention, too, that in keeping with our commitment to accessibility, on Saturday, January 14th, 8 p.m., we'll provide sound enhancement for the benefit of our patrons with hearing loss. So if anyone is suffering from any kind of hearing loss, they can come on that day and the sound will be enhanced for them.
Okay, great. So that's the January 14th performance at 8 o'clock for people who have hearing impairment. So let's...
Yeah.
turn back to your cast there for a second. You mentioned Leanne Taylor, Helena Levitt, and Julie Barbeau playing Polly, Pam, and Cheryl, the three mothers at the heart of Myth of the Ostrich. How do you settle on these three performers and then like figure out the chemistry after, or hope that the chemistry is going to work? Or, you know, do you audition them and feel like, I think this is going to fit? Like, how does that work for you as the director?
Oh, it's all in the stars, sir. You hope that I know these actors really well. I've worked with them before, so I know what they're capable of. I know what how they work together. So it really was a sense of just starting rehearsals, having discussions, having a lot of table reads. I really like doing that. I like when the actors are sitting around a table. We're not really rehearsing yet. We're really just discussing everybody's part in it and how they relate to one another and what their chemistry is. And what's really nice is that two of the characters, well, we all know each other very, very well, but two of the characters are especially close. And so their chemistry, that would be Holly and Cheryl, know each other very well. They hang out together in real life. And so their chemistry is there already. And Helena Levitt, who plays Pam, she just mixes in really well. So, I mean, there was very little work to do when it came to the chemistry. It was there already. So we were fortunate about that, it was already there. So it was great.
And performing with three people on stage, are they the only characters? Like, is that how?
They're the only characters. Murray, women.
Okay. So we talked a bit about Matt Murray and how he was able to skillfully craft the voice of women in a way that really impressed you. How does he kind of deftly set this up where we only talk to these mothers, but they are concerned about their kids off stage, so to speak? Can you give me some insight into that writing? And like, I was always curious about when you have only a couple of people on stage, but yet you have these characters off stage in their imaginations that we also have to imagine, but we never get to see them as audience members.
Right. Well, Matt had he had told me that the beautiful part about working with a Canadian artist playwright is that I can get in touch with him and we can talk, you know, which is really helpful for me as the director, even the cast as well. But he wrote this because he had friends that were going through a similar situation, and he sympathized with them and he empathized with them, and he was able to really think about what would be going on inside their head and how it would play out in a situation that he put together, and it worked that way. So he had some insight because he had talked to friends of his who had children that were going through a similar situation. And then he just created these characters that were, again, so different from each other. And that's what brings it all together, because at the end, all their differences come together and they become comrades all of a sudden. There were three diverse characters that come together at the end and they're comrades and they understand. And they've been through an hour and a half. They've been through a lot, and they've come to some realizations, and it works for them. So Matt was able to just take his own experience that he had told me about with friends of his who had children that were going through this, and just be able to put it into this play. And it's very successful. And like I said, it's written really well, very smart. You know, I was really impressed with it. But, you know, when I read a play, I think about what D squared voice is, and I heard our voice in that. We like to do, like I said, we are committed, and we have a responsibility in my eyes to produce Canadian content. And it's very important for me that when I read a play, I can almost hear our voice in real time. A very simple set. I don't like to have an elaborate set because I want the actors and I want the playwright's words, the dialogue, to speak for itself. I don't want you looking at our set saying, oh, that's so beautiful. I want you to walk away saying, wow, those were great performances and a really great play.
It's also more accessible as a theater production in terms of budget and time and planning to kind of have something that's simpler.
don't get me started on budget. Because, oh, my God. Yeah, it is simple, and I like simple anyway. You know, if I can have apple boxes, I'm fine with that too. You know,
no, but I think there's such a pure enjoyment in getting to see a show that is I'm not going to use the word stripped down because that's not what it is. It's because it's focused on the dynamics with the people that are on stage in the world that's created through things that are simple. And there's no razzle. Like, there are times for razzle dazzle and there's times for just the dialogue and the three performers. That is director and producer Dale Hayes of D Square Productions making their return to live theater with Myth of the Ostrich. The last thing I want to ask you about is, as you're saying, you were about to sign a contract just as the pandemic was starting. And that was nearly 3 years ago. So over this last period of time with your involvement with D Squared, were you ever concerned, like, you know, when are we ever going to be back on stage again? Are we going to be able to remount things? Was that challenging?
It was very challenging, Sarah. I mean, there were times when I thought, this is never going to happen. Like, when is this? Because, you know, you're deep in it. And then we had a lot of issues with this play, too. I was very sick at the beginning of 2020. I was very sick, and I wasn't sure it was ever going to happen. And then we lost a cast member, and then a couple of us got COVID. I mean, it was a challenge, and we're so happy where we are now. But, you know, I really didn't know, but I was hopeful because I love this play. We had already been cast. So the actors had 3 years to study their script, you know. So, except for one of them that we recast. But, there were times, you know, but I was hopeful because I love theater so much and I wanted to get out there and I wanted to produce this play. And so, you know, there were times that were gray, but most times we're very, very hopeful. And I figured we're going to do this, we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And we did it, even though we had huge challenges. Here we are, and we're about to open in a couple of days, and we're excited, and we can't wait to welcome our patrons again, and, you know, just to say hello, and how have you been, and, you know, just to start over again.
Well,
it almost feels like it's starting over again.
A fresh page, a fresh start, a fresh page in the book of life. Yeah. Well, I hope sincerely that you are feeling better, that you're doing better after a health scare. And that the cast is healthy and well as you get ready to go back to a live show. Thank you so much, Dale, for taking the time. Great to check in.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. We'll talk again soon. Best of luck.
All right. Thanks.
Director and producer Dale Hayes, who is overseeing Myth of the Ostrich, coming to the Siegel Studio starting on Monday, January 9th, running until the 15th. There's a break on the 13th, Friday, and there is going to be a sound-enhanced performance at 8 o'clock on January 14th, which is a Saturday show. Tickets are $35, $30 for senior students and QDF, $25 if you bring a group of 10 or more. For your tickets, head to siegelcenter.org. You can also call 514-739-7944. That is Myth of the Ostrich. It's a comedy by Matt Murray, siegelcenter.org. And you can also look up D Squared Productions for more information on their work and continuing productions. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Our final conversation of the evening is going to be about a triplex, a triptych, and a lot of trauma. It is the English language premiere of Wildfire. And if you think to yourself, who does English language premieres of Quebec plays? It's Talisman Theatre. Director John Lachlan Stewart is going to join me in just a couple of moments. You know what? Let's go back to the Johnny Legdig soundtrack. So much fun. This is from our interview earlier in the hour. I'm going to play for you the overture song as I let Dale go and get ready to get John on the line. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM, show about theater on the radio. Be back with you in a moment.
Come on, honey. One more push. One more push.
Please, doctor. Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a... It's a... Oh, God!
Where his dick is supposed to be.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Sarah Day. We were just listening to music there from the long-anticipated return of Johnny Legdick, the fabled rock opera, at Théâtre Sainte-Catherine next week. And a couple days after that, a brand new show is coming to La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine, January 16th to the 28th. A triptych, a triplex, and a lot of trauma. Daniel Paquette's play, Le Brasier, has been translated by Leanna Brody and is getting its English language premiere thanks to Talisman Theatre. Its director is John Lachlan Stewart, and he joins me on the phone. Welcome, John, and Happy New Year.
Hello, Happy New Year to everybody out there.
How was your holiday? Did you do anything special?
Oh, my God, we could spend much longer than 12 minutes talking about how incredible my... But the short story is that I spent the entirety of December 25th stranded in Ottawa in a cinema with my 7-year-old son.
Okay.
That's how I spent Christmas. So you can imagine what you will. It was incredible. It was the best Christmas I've ever had.
You were stranded on purpose at the cinema.
No. Oh, no. It was a big accident. There was a big storm that derailed a train, so we couldn't get home to Montreal. And we spent it together in the lobby of the cinema. It was hilarious.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That sounds like a play in and of itself.
yeah, definitely.
A friend of mine got stuck on the way to Toronto on Via Rail with the train that blocked that line. And I just could not believe that right before Christmas, for someone who does celebrate Christmas,
funny.
To be stuck on a train for over 17 hours, like absolutely wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So something similar happened to us, but it wasn't as bad as your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how do you entertain a 7-year-old for a whole day in a cinema?
Oh, God. I mean, he and I, you know, he's a real theater kid, and we both entertain each other. Honestly, it was the most fun I've seen him had. We did a Secret Santa. We gave each other a $15 limit and bought stuff at the only stores that were open, which was like a sort of Femme Appetit type of place. And he got me a bag of Doritos and a bag of, which is what he just wanted to eat. And then I got him a tutu. So it was hilarious. And we were playing arcades and talking to the people working at the cinema. It was surreal. It was awesome.
Okay. Yeah. And when you got home, you were so relieved. You're never happier to be home.
Oh, it was so good. It was so cool. But honestly, I wouldn't have changed a thing. It was an incredible story. It was really incredible.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you're going to be dining out on that story for years to come as well. So it's going to pay off in the long run.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, John, you it's funny because you don't really need an extra story for your inventory. You are an amazing storyteller. I'm thrilled that you're getting to direct this particular play, which has, in turn, a psychopathic baby, a cast of perverse misfits, and a caged child, as well as a murderous pet. So really, Wildfire has it all. French version is called Brasier. Maybe mm-hmm. we can start about the start of the show, because we're meeting three generations. I understand there is like three. The number three is very important here. Triptych. Are we following a story in linear fashion? Let's start there.
No, you know, I think David Paquet's characters are perfect for theater lovers. You know, like the characters arrive on stage and they're sort of Buffon kind of characters. They're almost like what you see in front of is what you get. The story is what is happening in front of you, and they tell it. It's very immediate. So I don't think you need to come in thinking you need to follow any kind of detailed story about lineage or blood in the way that other big sweeping American dramas talk about tragedy in this way and trauma passed on through families. It's really a different kind of play. It's not realistic. It's a really amazing, funny, shocking, sometimes grotesque play that makes us laugh as much as it makes us shocked and makes us even cry sometimes. But it's definitely, I won't give away any punches to the play, but there is definitely a kind of cycle going on where you see how the three plays are kind of connected to one another, but at the same time, they're really not connected in a realistic way. And what you end up with is kind of an incredible puzzle that sort of mystifies and shocks at the end. Yeah.
Trauma, unexamined trauma, is at the core here. I'm curious to know if David is trying to explore whether trauma is something we can escape, especially when it's within a family, or do we leave that question open to the audience?
Well, for me, so I know, like, on paper, and me and the cast really talked a lot about trauma a lot, mm-hmm. and we talked about things we all connect with as a team. Like, for me, what touches me so much about the characters is how each of them feel there's maybe a broken part of them that they weren't responsible for, that they were born with something kind of broken inside of them, and they don't really know what that thing is. That's something I really, really connect with as a person, and I think we can all sort of really connect with. But in the end, you know, what I think David is really good at telling in his stories, not just this play, but even his play Pocket Pick and other stuff that he's written, is I think he talks about unrequited passion or blocked passion, people who are trying to find ways to just be themselves sexually, intimately, and to open themselves up to the world. So much of that is what, to me, what is actually at the heart of Brazzi and what David talks about. So really at the core of this kind of grotesque Buffon play is this very beautiful, beautiful sort of rally to be who you are and be intimate, be loving, and be sexual no matter what the consequences are. That's kind of really actually what I think is really at the core. There's a lot of love and a lot of sexuality in the play that's explored in a really kind of awkward, unique way that's very, very beautiful, that's very, very intimate in the play. And that's not to make the play sound like a sort of burning, intimate, sort of intense romance. It really is like a big laugh out loud, cry out loud kind of Buffon play. But at the heart of it, these characters just kind of want to learn how to love in the world and be themselves.
That is John Lachlan Stewart, who is directing a brand new, well, not brand new show itself, but a brand new premiere of a French language play written by David Paquette. It is originally called Brazier and has been translated into Wildfire by Leanna Brody, coming to La Chapelle starting on the 16th of January. John, I've seen you perform in many different capacities, and most recently at the Meta Awards when you did this hilarious modern dance interpretation of an award presenting. You're a very elastic performer. You can do a lot of really goofy, funny, but shocking things. So you've mentioned that there is a Buffon emphasis here, the outlandish extreme. I mean, we get that just from looking at the description where we're talking about a murderous tarantula and a psychopathic baby. Mm-hmm. So what kind of guidance are you giving your performers when it comes to kind of leaning into the eccentric and the extraordinary?
You know, when we started out together, as a team, we just had a lot of fun playing with size. To me, it's really just a technical thing of seeing, like, what happens when you look at a scene or look at text and you do it at a certain level, a certain physical level, at 50%, at 100%, at 150%. If you draw it out, if you do it more long, more loud, more hard, it really starts just like that to get a sort of boussole on the actors, get a kind of compass or a reading on them of how does it make you feel to do it this way or this versus this way, and then to play with it. But I think at the heart of it, it's to know, how would I say it? I mean, I think the way we can accept those characters and we can laugh at the story is if we think of them as expressionistic characters, or if you imagine like some of your favorite graphic novels, that the style of art is drawn in a way that the characters are a bit more over the top and it kind of can make us laugh. Or if you think of certain animes, for instance, where the animation style is so over the top, but the themes are so intense but there's something that makes it palatable. I think that was a big part of the discussion. I think it's also like in my own life, you know, and in my spirit of what I love about theater is its capacity to, we can sort of laugh at our own traumas by clowning them or putting on a mask and kind of laugh, screaming the thing going on. So it's actually a way to be cathartic with the themes rather than being so precious with them. And I actually think it makes them more palatable. You know, but it was a long journey. It's not like you snap your fingers and actors are able to just embody that. It's really a careful process, and you all have to sort of talk through it together to make sure that everybody's on board to play that way.
I'm wholly intrigued by the cast, which is so funny. I was just speaking with Dale Hayes of D Squared Productions, who's getting ready to present her show, The Myth of the Ostrich, on Monday. And it's a three-hander, three women, friends, moms, worrying about their kids. And here we are talking about a different kind of family trauma with three very, very skilled performers, Davide Chiesese, Kathleen Stavert, and Julie Tamiko Manning. Tell me about the chemistry between the three of these performers. They all strike me as coming from very different places, I think, in my mind.
Yeah.
How did they come together for you?
Oh, God, you know, I mean, what I love about our team is all of us are bilingual, okay? That we all have a connection to the original language that the play's written in. And I think that was very, very important for Davide, especially. A thing that really inspired me about Davide is he talked about, Davide is an Italian-Canadian, an Italian Montrealer, and he really talked about his family and how his family talks and expresses love in a loud way. and it was really grounding, like, for him, the text and the way these characters are expressed by David Paquet. He was like, well, this isn't far from like a family dinner for me. And when I hear my family screaming this way, I understand actually that this is how they love.
Yeah.
And that was really, really key for me. That was really incredible.
Yeah.
I think it's like any play, you know. I love these three actors because we've all had some way of crossing paths or working together. Me and Judy Tamiko Manning, especially, we've worked maybe four or five times together now. And I learn more about, for instance, how Judy has to take her time learning kind of a psychological. This is my perspective. I hope she doesn't hear this interview and hope I'm like judging her process. But I feel like she works psychologically from the inside, and then she's able to do the contours and do the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathleen Stavert is this incredible, more subtle. I feel like she's a very, very naturalistic, very, very honest actor who you need to kind of help her understand how to blow it up. And like, they're all just very different. But what I think they're all really good at is that they just have years of experience under their belt at this point. So they're confident actors, and they take the stage the way they want to. And I think when we see theater, we want to see actors doing that. We want to see actors who, when they get out there, they're excited to play on the stage. Now it's like a playground for them. And all three of them really get that. So I think, you know, I'm smiling as I say this. I think it's really going to be a party when we do this play.
I'm speaking with John Lachlan Stewart, director of Wildfire, the 18th production from Talisman Theatre, which specializes in English language premieres of Francophone productions, originally premiered in Quebec. David Paquet is the playwright. He graduated from NTS. One of his other plays, Le Poids des Fourmis, won the 22, so last year's Governor General's Award. And I think this production is a little bit more recent and was kind of directed iconically by Philippe Sear, done at Théâtre d'Aujourd'hui. Is that a lot of pressure for you to take on a play that's been kind of iconic? I think it's going to see a new audience, number one.
Yeah.
So people aren't going to be coming in and comparing notes necessarily, but is that a bit intimidating?
You're talking about the Brasier, right? Coming into Philippe Sear's shoes. I thought this was an incredible exercise, actually. I feel very privileged, actually, to be a part of it. I had a nice, like, sit-down with Philippe Sear to talk about his entry point into his play.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen three or four of his productions now, and I feel fascinated by his type of theater. What I see is his type of play or his type of theater. You know, he did a Attempt on Her Life by Martin Crimp in a way that I kind of wouldn't have imagined. I really imagined it differently, and I think Philippe Sear is very playful and really understands theater and the immediacy of theater and play and the imagination on stage. And when I started understanding kind of his how he sees it, he thought it was very important for actors to throw themselves into it and have fun and sort of throw themselves into the size of these sketches of these characters. I sort of really understood and felt thrilled by that. I find because I don't have to invent the wheel with this production, there's already been a kind of chemin, a kind of path done already for the process. I feel like There's no pressure. For me, I really do feel like it's just a party. And I honestly feel, you know, if we were just doing the production fresh, I would still feel in such safe hands with David Paquet's text, because it's, he really is one of our country's best writers, Quebec's best writers, in my opinion. I think it's incredible. I could hear him. I could read a play of his based on the phone book, and I would be interested. He's really a person of words. He's really has a strength with words and character, and a deep emotional connection, I feel, with his voices, with his characters. So for me, it's no pressure. I think it's just going to be a party that everybody's, honestly, that everybody's invited to. It's going to be a wild party.
The invite is out there, and I've got my invite, and I can't wait to see it. I know David has also said that he's very excited for this. This is kind of like his first appearance for the English language theater community in Montreal, and he's very jazzed about that as well.
What?
My first foray into Montreal's English language theater scene, and he's very excited also to have the show at La Chapelle too, which is nice.
Wow. Well, that one was news to me. I mean, that's kind of wild that he's been done in, his play was produced in Toronto, but not here in Montreal. That's kind of crazy.
It is funny how that shakes out at times, and it may just be down to timing and opportunity, right? That sometimes these things just don't kind of make sense in that sort of way, but I think it's overdue based on just the, you know, if you look at his plaudits and his history so far, having won the Governor General's Award for last year, I think this is going to be a great discovery. John, it's been so nice to catch up with you and to hear more about your process. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you as always.
Thank you so much. Okay, we'll see you at La Chapelle.
Okay, see ya. Bye.
That was director John Lachlan Stewart. He is gearing up to present Wildfire, a translation of Brasier by David Paquette. It's going to be at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine, airing staged at 7:30, the 16th to the 28th, so the latter half of the month. There's going to be an ASL interpretation on January 28th at 3 p.m., so a matinee show. La Chapelle is at 3700 Saint-Dominique. Tickets are $30. There is a reduced price for 60 and over, 30 and under in students, cultural workers, that's $25. And 15 and under, get in for $15, which is pretty sweet. Opening night rate, $15, which is really nice as well. For tickets and more information, you're going to want to head over on your keyboard to lachapelle.org or call 514-843-7738. We were just talking there about David Paquette, the playwright, and how this is kind of the first time his work will be shown in English. This is being presented by Talisman Theatre. It's their 18th production. They produce English language premieres of Quebec plays written in French that have been translated, and Lynn Paquette is the artistic and executive director. You can visit Talisman Theatre to get more information about the work that they do. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. You can catch past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. We've actually had an update to the website. It's looking kind of spiffy. I got to go and update this past show if you want to head back and listen back to anything or perhaps an element that you missed. Also, follow us for updates and images of our guests and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. A very big thank you to my guests this evening, Jimmy Karamanis and McLeod Truesdale, who are the brains behind Johnny Legdick, the fabled rock opera, coming to Théâtre Sainte-Catherine on the 13th and the 14th. One show on the 13th at 8 o'clock, and then 8 and 10 p.m. on the 14th. TheatreSainteCatherine.com for tickets and more info. Dale Hayes, who is directing The Myth of the Ostrich, coming to the Siegel Studio starting on Monday, January the 9th, and running until the 15th, SiegelCenter.org for your tickets, and John Lachlan Stewart there, who was my guest talking about Wildfire, a three-generational story about processing trauma and toxic family heritage with a tarantula in a triplex. It's a tragicomedy. Lots of tease there. A very big thank you to my guests. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure that this show gets to air. You did such an awesome job supporting me on the show. I hope everyone has had a very happy new year. My name is Sarah DeAy. I'm going to be with you next week here on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters with my friend Fortner Anderson. Thanks for tuning in.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Good evening and welcome to the January 5th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture by Rami Khoury. He has reported on the Arab region for decades. He's a senior fellow of the Middle East Initiative at the Belfer Center at Harvard's Kennedy School. He is the founding director of the Issam Faris Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University of Beirut. That was from him. 2006 to 2014. He was executive editor of the Beirut Daily Star, and before that, the editor-in-chief of the Jordan Times. His articles appear in major newspapers around the world. The title of his lecture tonight is Arab Autocracies and U.S. Policy. It was recorded in Denver, Colorado on December 2nd of 2022. So here's tonight's lecture on Grey Matters, Arab Autocracies and U.S. Policy by Rami Khoury.
Most of the close allies of the U.S. in the Arab region are autocrats. All the Arabs are autocrats. And the problem is not just that these rulers are violent and brutal, it's that they've all been like this for many, many years. The Arab region is the only part of the world where not a single government has been validated by its own citizenry.